This is the BBC. For details of our complete range of programmes, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Welcome to the latest global news, compiled in the early hours of Wednesday, the 13th of December. I'm Oliver Conway with a selection of highlights from across the BBC World Service. Coming up, the UN Secretary-General says continued subsidies of fossil fuel amount to humanity investing in its own doom.
Climate change is moving much faster than we are. We are in a war for the very existence of life on our planet as we know it, but we have an important ally: science and technology.
A deadly explosion at an Austrian gas terminal has prompted Italy to declare a state of emergency over energy supplies. We hear about the desperate journeys of teenage migrants crossing the Alps to try to get to France.
It was snowing a lot. When we reached the top of the mountain, it was dark. We couldn't see anything. We had snow up to our chests. It was as if we were swimming in it.
Also in this podcast, one of the biggest wildfires in Californian history continues its devastating journey.
I'm a nervous wreck. I've only lived in Santa Barbara 5 years, so this is the first time I've experienced a fire. So I've been in panic mode all day.
And later.
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, something truly special.
Star Wars The Last Jedi is being released around the world this week. We hear what the critics made of it. But first, to the French capital, where business people, politicians and campaigners spent the day discussing how to get big business more involved in efforts to reduce global warming. The One Planet Summit, convened by the French President Emmanuel Macron, was held on the second anniversary of the Paris Climate Accord. And he painted a bleak picture of progress so far.
On est en train de perdre la bataille. Il faut pas se tromper. On passe un très bon moment.
We are losing the battle, make no mistake. OK, this is a good moment. It's great that lots of people are here, getting to know each other, but we are losing the battle. Those who came before us were lucky. They could say, we didn't know, and that was true. Now it's fine. We know that 2 years ago, to the day, for the first time, almost the entire international community signed an accord in Paris to make commitments. Some said it wasn't enough and that the engagements weren't strong enough, but it was a start.
Well, that was a theme echoed by the UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres, who said continued subsidies of fossil fuel effectively meant humanity was investing in its own doom.
Climate change is moving much faster than we are. Atmospheric levels of carbon dioxide are higher than they have been for 800,000 years. We are in a war for the very existence of life on our planet as we know it, but we have an important ally: science and technology. Green business is good business, and we are seeing new industries, new markets, healthier environments, more jobs. And the message is simple. Those who fail to bet on a green economy will be living in a grey future.
Jim Yong Kim, who's president of the World Bank Group, one of the conveners of the Paris summit, spoke about their part in the process.
Today we're announcing we are going to stop all upstream oil and gas operations. We've changed our position tremendously. We used to be a very large financier of fossil fuel projects. We've gotten out of coal completely. We believe that natural gas is still going to be a transition fuel for low and middle income countries. But we're getting out of upstream, and we think that the renewable industry is changing so quickly, we may be able to get out of oil and gas altogether soon. And the only time we might do any kind of upstream gas is only in the poorest countries in the most desperate situations.
The Microsoft founder Bill Gates has also been talking to the BBC, saying help had to be given to those around the world most affected by climate change, poor farmers in poor countries.
Those countries, those people, are the ones who've emitted almost no greenhouse gas, whereas we, because of air conditioning and, nice houses, we're far more protected. The gas we've already emitted will cause problems for those farmers. And so we need to help them by giving them seeds that deal better with high temperature, deal better with drought, and that they're more productive. So even if they do have a bad year, they have buffer stocks from the other years so they're able to feed their children.
So is the summit host Emmanuel Macron right to say that the world is losing the fight against climate change? The BBC's James Menendez asked Megan Darby of the website Climate Change News.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of on a trajectory for 3 degrees of warming or so, which is, you know, the science shows it's going to destabilize the climate quite significantly. We're looking at more floods, more intense storms, more droughts, more generally disruptive weather, more sea level rise. So that's the kind of course we're on at the moment. We knew that when the Paris Agreement was signed, but a lot more work would be needed to get under the 2 degree target that was set in Paris.
Was there any good news that came out of the summit today then?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing that President Macron was trying to do, I think, was to show progress in the real economy. So, you know, money being invested in climate-friendly projects and not in, you know, dirty old fossil fuels, shifting the trillions is what they like to talk about. So there was some progress on that front. There's a coalition of investors that have promised to really put pressure on the biggest polluting company to align their business models with the goals of the Paris Agreement. There were lots of announcements. There were kind of political coalitions of different countries promising to focus on this sector or that sector. So I think that there are positive signs, but as he says, you know, there's a sense of urgency and are people doing enough?
What about the World Bank announcement on not investing in fossil fuels? What do you make of that? And will other financial institutions follow suit, do you think?
Yeah, well, this is a pretty big deal. They did the same for coal a few years ago, and where they go, private investment follows. And so if they're making a decisive shift towards clean energy, then that leverages more private money for those kind of sectors. There have been some announcements from big investors as well. I think the insurance company AXA, Norway's biggest private pension fund. Yeah, so there are some signs that they're trying to move their money into greener, cleaner investment.
And what about the United States? It wasn't obviously at the summit today. They're not part of the Paris climate deal. President Macron said that he thought that he could get President Trump to come back on board. I just wonder whether that's likely and whether, in fact, it matters, or can the rest of the world just carry on without them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does matter. The US is the second largest emitter. And so a lot of states and cities have said, we're still going to act on climate change. But federal policy does make a difference. So it does make a difference whether the US is in or not. President Trump hasn't left the Paris Agreement yet. The US can't actually technically leave until 2020. So that would take effect after the next election. So this is likely to be a political issue going into the next presidential election. There is definitely a plausible scenario where Donald Trump stays in. He said he's open to re-engaging on more favourable terms to the US. So, you know, if he can get some kind of concessions on his, you know, pet topics like clean coal, and I use air quotes for that, then, yeah, there's a plausible scenario where the US stays in the deal. But in the meantime, President Trump is pursuing policies that are really counter to the goals of the Paris Agreement.
Megan Darby, deputy editor at the website Climate Change News. One of the most destructive wildfires in Californian history continues its relentless march across the state. Hundreds of homes have been destroyed and tens of thousands of people forced to flee. James Cook reports from Santa Barbara.
I'm standing now looking out over the Pacific Ocean. In the hills above Santa Barbara, I can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 helicopters in the sky around here. They are extremely busy shuttling to and fro, dropping water on the flames which are burning just a short distance up the top of this ridge beyond us. And also here are perhaps 20 men in orange jumpsuits. They're prisoners, they're firefighter prisoners, and they are clearing brush out of the way to try to create a break to stop this huge wildfire. The fire here may become the largest in California's history. It has already consumed an area the size of New York City and Paris combined. And as it gobbled up the coastal forest, it forced tens of thousands to flee.
I'm a nervous wreck. I've only lived in Santa Barbara 5 years, so this is the first time I've experienced a fire. So I've been in panic mode all day.
Houses started burning early in the evening, and they accelerated during the night. And hopefully the wind will die down and we'll see it recede some. But it's been pretty tough.
Good friends up the street lost their homes. And I'm just so sad for them. I'm happy for myself and those of us that kept their homes. But it's awful.
Well, all this creaking and rattling is the noise of a conveyor belt inside a lettuce greenhouse. This isn't a greenhouse like you'd have in your garden. This is a huge greenhouse, lettuce stretching as far as the eye can see. And here, they are affected by the fire. They're having to blow the ash off the leaves so they can package it to send it to market. The company is called Pete's Living Greens, and the owner, Pete Overgag, is determined to keep making lettuce despite the ash in the air.
We're able to go year-round and harvest every day, which also means that when there's a catastrophe like this fire going on, the plants are still growing. They don't know there's a fire out there.
I mean, you're doing well to keep going in these difficult times, but it must be hard. I mean, your employees obviously must be worried about their homes.
Yeah, it's been touch and go since this all started last week, Tuesday. You know, everyone, of course, lives in the area, and there's been a lot of us have been evacuated. We have about 150 employees, and so it's been rough on everyone. And, you know, every day we're wondering what the day will bring.
This is the new normal, and this could be something that happens every year or every few years. It happens to some degree. It's just more intense, more widespread, and we're about ready to have firefighting at Christmas.
California feels like a state under siege by the climate, with years of drought and longer and more devastating wildfire seasons. The governor, Jerry Brown, says in a warming world, these fires are no surprise. Back on the mountain, a modern-day chain gang is at work. They're not shackled, but the prisoners do wear orange jumpsuits, and they're cutting a fire break to protect the houses below.
There you go. Easy.
The Southern California fires have claimed the lives of dozens of horses. This was the chilling noise as hundreds of racehorses were let free to gallop for their lives. Not all of them made it. When this wildfire started 7 days ago, conditions were terrifying, with intense, dry, gusty winds. It's much calmer now, and more than 6,000 firefighters are making progress at a price. So far, the firefight alone has cost some $40 million.
A report from California by James Cook. A major explosion at a gas pipeline hub in Austria has caused the wholesale price of gas to soar to a four-year high. Italy has declared a state of emergency as it receives most of its gas supplies from the plant. The deadly blast follows a series of accidents at pipelines which supply Europe. Here's our business editor, Simon Jack.
The most serious incident was an explosion at a major European gas hub in Austria. There was also a power cut on a gas platform in Norway. The incidents added to concerns caused by yesterday's shutdown of the pipeline that transports 40% of the oil and gas from the North Sea. Stuart Elliott from energy consultancy S&P Global Platts said the combination of events should serve as a wake-up call.
If you were to describe a worst-case scenario for European gas markets, then this would be it. And any of these factors alone would test the robustness of our markets. But the combination of so many unconnected incidents is really unprecedented.
Gas supplies to Italy have been very badly affected by the Austrian explosion, and the energy minister there has declared a state of emergency.
You're listening to Global News, the most important stories and the best interviews and on-the-spot reporting from the BBC World Service. If you miss any of the week's main events, you can always catch up with The World This Week. It's available to download from our website. The man suspected of attacking New York City's main bus terminal on Monday has been charged. Akayed Ullah, who's 27 and a Bangladeshi immigrant, was seriously hurt when a crudely made device strapped to his body exploded. During a speech at the White House, Donald Trump again criticised the green card system that he said had allowed the bomber entry into the US.
There have now been two terrorist attacks in New York City in recent weeks carried out by foreign nationals here on green cards. The first attacker came through the visa lottery, and the second through chain migration. We're going to end both of them. The lottery system and chain migration. We're going to end them.
Our South Asia editor and former correspondent in Bangladesh, Anbarasan Etirajan, told me more about the bomber and his motives.
The police in Bangladesh earlier, they said this guy was not on the radar. There was no criminal record against Akayat-Ullah. But then they finally traced his family. They live in Dhaka, his wife and the in-laws. Today they went to the house, they questioned them, but the police insisted that these people were not under any suspicion. What they were trying to do was to find out whether he was radicalized in Bangladesh, because he left the country in 2011, and then he went to the U.S. on a visa for children of siblings of U.S. citizens. So people are trying to find out where exactly he got radicalized, but no one has been arrested in Bangladesh yet.
And have there been other Bangladeshis involved in this kind of thing in the U.S.?
If you remember, in 2013, there was a Bangladeshi student. He went to study in a university and he got radicalized and he was wanting to get in touch with some of the Islamists. But then one of the government informants, he came into touch with him. Finally, he was trying to blow up the Fed Reserve. He was arrested in a sting operation and he was given 30 years in prison. So it's not the first case from Bangladesh. But again, you know, immigrants coming from different countries, not only in Bangladesh, you know, if you come from Pakistan or even some from India were involved in activities in this country, here in the UK. But what it shows is that people can get radicalized, not only in their own countries, even in the United States as well.
Anbarasan Etirajan. Scientists are beginning to unlock the secrets of the Great Red Spot on Jupiter, the biggest storm in the solar system. Our correspondent Jonathan Amos is at the American Geophysical Union meeting in New Orleans.
We've learnt something about how deep the storm is. So we know how wide it is. You could fit planet Earth in its width. But we didn't know how far down into the atmosphere of Jupiter went. But we got the Juno probe, and that's got some instruments on that can penetrate through the cloud to sense some of the internal structure of the planet. And they've seen the warmth that's associated with the Great Red Spot. And they can see down at least until 350 kilometres, and it may even be deeper than that. So it really is a colossal feature, the biggest storm in the solar system, as you said, Ollie, and we're starting to see it in 3D.
Yeah, interesting, but are there any wider implications?
So the interesting thing about Jupiter is obviously it's big. It's the biggest planet in the solar system. It was probably the first thing to form after the Sun 4.5 billion years ago. It's so big that you could take all of the other planets, all of the comets, the asteroids, and fit them inside the volume that is Jupiter. So it's tremendously important. And unless you kind of understand Jupiter and its workings, its internal systems, you don't really understand the rest of the solar system. It's kind of the key to understanding everything else that's going on. And, you know, here is the biggest visible feature. And we're only now, after, you know, a couple of hundred years of observations of this thing, really starting to understand its anatomy.
Our science correspondent, Jonathan Amos. Teenage migrants are attempting dangerous nighttime crossings over the Alps in their desperate attempts to reach France. Some 2,000 people have made the journey since July, according to one local charity, with large numbers of unaccompanied minors among them. Many have come from migrant camps in Italy, described as overcrowded and under-resourced. Our Paris correspondent Lucy Williamson has been to the Alpine village of Nevaches at the main crossing point into France.
Each night, mountain guides from the French village of Nevaches make the two-hour trek up to this alpine pass. A nightly volunteer rescue team patrolling a new migrant trail from Italy into France.
There's a petit chemin qui descend là derrière et qui arrive sur la route.
Tonight, it's Alain and Sylvie.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup.
Close to midnight, Alain spots these six young men. He quickly hands round hot drinks and snacks. Their gratitude, as visible as their breath in the sub-zero night.
I am finding it a little bit difficult because snow and mountains and night, everything is dark and land is covered with snow.
Nazir is 28 years old from Afghanistan. He's been given permission to stay in Italy as a refugee, but not to travel across the border. He says the jobs are in France.
Anna?
Oui?
Prends-le.
As the group moves down the mountain, their torches attract the border police. In seconds, the migrants melt away into the trees. A police search turns up only one of them. After they've gone, Nazir and the others reappear.
I saw them, but they didn't see me. I escaped.
Local charity workers say that almost 2,000 migrants have arrived in France through the Alps since July. And while numbers are dipping with the winter temperatures here, those who do arrive are in worse condition.
When I woke up and saw my cut feet on the sheet, I thought it's all over. Before then, I was athletic. I played football. I had three jobs. Now my life is over, as if I were dead.
Mamadou took the same path across the Alps last year. By the time he was rescued, his feet had frozen. Both had to be amputated.
It was snowing a lot. I was wearing blue trainers and my friend a light pair of jeans. When we reached the top of the mountain, it was dark. We couldn't see anything. We had snow up to our chests. It was as if we were swimming in it.
France has tightened controls on its border with Italy, and the police have emphasized that they're bound by national and international law to return the illegal migrants when they find them. But staff at the makeshift reception center here say the number of arrivals has risen sharply this year and that minors make up more than half the admissions. 15-year-old Sheikh from Ivory Coast is one of the newest arrivals. He told us that he and his older brother had been held for ransom in Libya before trying to cross the Mediterranean in a leaking boat.
Fishermen saved some of us. They saved 54 people. All the rest died. My older brother who came with me died. He didn't reach Europe. I arrived in France and I thank God.
Sheikh reached the safety of a migrant camp in Italy, but he made the choice to escape across the Alps, determined, as a native French speaker, to make a life in France.
I suffered a lot when I was very young. I want to have a better future and go to school. I want to do something with my life. My mother is dead and I've got no support. Nobody's left back home.
As temperatures drop, there are fewer migrants arriving here each night. But staff say those who do are in worse condition, some unable to stand. Each one a reminder for this tranquil ski resort of the mountain Europe needs to climb.
Lucy Williamson reporting from the Alpine village of Nevers. One of the most eagerly awaited films of the year, Star Wars The Last Jedi, is being released around the world this week.
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, something truly special.
Part of the trailer, which has already been viewed more than 40 million times on YouTube. The plot has been shrouded in secrecy, but we're now getting a few clues because the first reviews have just been published. The newsroom's Luke Jones has been looking at the reaction of the critics.
They absolutely love it. The Times of London says, it took them 40 years, but they've finally done it. The best Star Wars film of the series. There, that's it. It's that simple, they say. Vanity Fair say it's a pure success. Empire magazine says The Last Jedi delivers everything you want from a Star Wars movie. Fierce lightsaber action, space dogfight, exotic creatures. People off British telly as bad guys, because why not? But layers it with story twists, character arcs and an emotional wallop that you could never have predicted. So they're bang on board.
Because the last major one in the series, The Force Awakens, also got good reviews and was seen as something of a remake of the original Star Wars. Is this one a remake of the original Empire Strikes Back at all?
Well, Sort of. A lot of the reviews sort of talk about it being stylistically very much like an old Star Wars film. It's got, you know, lots of silly characters which are basically there for just visual gags. It's shot in a very kind of, you know, the film director, one doing this one, Rian Johnson, has a background in sort of film noir. So it's very sort of beautifully and elegantly put together. But the sort of the point of this one is to bring in that new generation of characters. So obviously Mark Hamill is back as Luke Skywalker. Carrie Fisher, who died in December 2016, is back as Princess Leia, her last film. But this film, without giving anything away, is really about ushering in the new generation. Someone like Adam Driver, The Guardian, say that it's essentially it's his film over and above anyone else's. But it is long. It's 2.5 hours. And the plot, the New York Times admits, is quite complex and sometimes gets lost with itself. But so many of the reviews just say, if nothing else, it is so confident of what it's about and the kind of spectacle it can offer that if you're into Star Wars, you'll be carried away with it easily.
Yeah, you've seen it. Star Wars fans will like it.
Star Wars fans will like it. For people like me who don't really know a lot about Star Wars, it's got great big set piece action sequences which start the film and end the film. In the middle, it gets a little bit lost. Vanity Fair say in their review that it gets a little bit spiritual in the middle with Luke Skywalker and Jedi Rey, played by Daisy Ridley. And that, as you mentioned, Empire Strikes Back, it's got that feel of, you know, that we're meant to be into kind of the metaphysical side of it and lots of discussions about the Force. I sort of almost drifted off in that point, but it picked up again with a great big fight to end it all off. So I think most people will find something to go along with.
Luke Jones there. And that's all from us for now, but an updated version of the Global News podcast will be available to download later. Before I go, can I quickly mention another BBC World Service podcast that you may like? It's called The Conversation. It brings together two inspirational women who are connected by a shared life experience. It's about women, by women, and it's for everyone. This week's edition takes us inside women's prisons, what happens there and how the dynamics differ from male prisons. Search for The Conversation wherever you're hearing this. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.